in Corey versus Escajeda, have council had an opportunity to review our written procedures?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does either of you have any questions?
No, Your Honor.
In that case, we're ready for argument by appellant. Run the podium down if you wish.
Let's see.
It usually works.
There we go. Good afternoon, Judge Webb. May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Boonen, and with me is my co-counsel, Kimberly Holt. We represent the defendants and appellants in this matter. In this case, the plaintiff, a physician, sought to recover half of the monies earned by an anesthesiology practice named Northwest Anesthesia during a five-year period where the evidence was undisputed that she did no work for the medical practice, was unable to work for the medical practice, and had retired from the practice of anesthesiology. One of the critical issues in this case is whether plaintiff remained a shareholder of Northwest Anesthesia during the relevant time period, because in order for her to recover on a breach of fiduciary duty claim at trial, she had to be a shareholder. However, plaintiff could not be a shareholder of Northwest Anesthesia under the Medical Practices Act. This was asserted initially as affirmative defense, moved for judgment on the pleadings, directed verdict at trial, and then in the post-trial briefing on the declaratory judgment claim. And we are now asking this court to reverse the trial court's judgment on the breach of fiduciary duty claim and on the judgment on the claim for declaratory relief. The key point for purposes of this appeal is that under Colorado law, there cannot be passive investors in a medical practice.
Did the trial court make a specific factual finding as to whether or not NWA was engaged in providing medical services?
The trial court, in its ruling on the first claim for relief, the declaratory judgment, avoided that issue by ruling that even if it was, that the plaintiff would not be divested of her shares. So in its ruling on the declaratory judgment claim, it did not reach that issue.
Thank you.
The trial court, it would appear, found that the incorporators of Northwest apparently did not intend to qualify under the act. And in reviewing the articles of incorporation, it appears that way to me as well. Would you agree with that, that there was no intent by the parties to incorporate under the act?
What I can agree with, Your Honor, is that when Northwest Anesthesia was incorporated in 1988, and this was prior to the time that either the plaintiff or the defendant actually were became owners of the company, it was an employment service for CRNAs, and that at that time, I think it's fair to say that they did not intend to apply it to the Medical Practices Act because at that time, fairly said, it was employing CRNAs as a service, but then the hospital was then using them. So at that time, I would agree with that, Your Honor. The key point, and I think what's undisputed, is in 1993, and this is Trial Exhibit CC, there was a new contract entered into with the hospital, a medical directorship agreement whereby Northwest Anesthesia provided medical services to St. Anthony North Hospital through its shareholder physician employees, and that from that date going forward, the plaintiff and the defendant, as shareholders, were receiving compensation. They were having taxes withheld. They were paying taxes, and Northwest had a contract with the hospital and was providing medical services. So from that point going forward, Your Honor, and I don't think either doctor intended to be in violation of this act. Should they have converted it to a PC at that point? Yes, that is something that should have been done. So there's an important distinction between what the original intent would have been and what occurred when our clients came on board and started working for the company and how the company was performing medical services going forward from 1993. So this active practice requirement, and again, I know you've read the briefs, I won't delve into this in great detail, but it's important to emphasize that, and I think the Hall versus Frankel case that the Court of Appeals issued in 2008 indicated that having an active practice requirement can prevent the commercial exploitation of a medical practice by ensuring that the individuals who are actually practicing medicine through the corporations are the one who owns it, that there's no one who's a passive investor. So the statute indicates that shareholders shall be individuals who are actively engaged in the practice of medicine in the offices of the corporation. The only exceptions, we would argue, are the ones that are enumerated in the statute, which say illness, accident, time spent in the armed services, on vacation, and on leaves of absence is not to exceed 1 year.
But doesn't your entire argument assume that the Medical Practices Act dictates what the governing documents of this corporation don't provide?
Our argument assumes that in order for Northwest Anesthesia to have practiced medicine, the physicians to have practiced medicine through it, they needed to have been in compliance with the Medical Practices Act.
Okay, why isn't the alternative interpretation that they practiced medicine, they didn't comply with the Act, and therefore they bear all the consequences of not having done so?
And I understand, Your Honor, that that is the plaintiff's argument here, that the plaintiff says compliance with the Medical Practices Act is optional, that she's free to practice medicine through Northwest Anesthesia, have it not be in compliance with the Medical Practices Act, and simply face whatever consequences may arise from that. The response to that, Your Honor, is where a physician comes to a court in Colorado and asks for, as the plaintiff did here, a judicial determination of her rights in a medical practice, Northwest Anesthesia, and asked to have the court authorize compensation be paid to her based upon her status as a shareholder, that if you come to a court and you ask for a judicial determination of your rights that the in a medical practice, that the medical practice must be in compliance with the Colorado law, that you can't come to a court and say, essentially, I've engaged in what would be called unprofessional conduct. I may be liable to the Board of Medical Examiners for some ratification, but I want to come here to this court and have my rights determined in a medical practice, which I say is not in compliance with the Act.
Well, to the extent that, for lack of a better term, I'll call that an unclean hands kind of argument, did you make it to the trial court?
Well, Your Honor, I would not argue that that is an unclean hands argument because we believe that the Northwest Anesthesia has to be in compliance with the Medical Practices Act. But the answer is no, and that's also, I don't believe, would be the defense to the
Is it? I mean, if it's not unclean hands, is it estoppel?
Well,
what and help me understand this. What exactly is it that requires the trial court to impose on NWA all these statutory criteria, as opposed to saying you didn't comply with the statute, whatever sanctions are before us is not at issue in this case?
Well, because it's not simply on the medical practice, but on the physicians who come before it, that if a physician comes and asks to have its rights declared under a medical practice in Colorado, that its rights is declared under a medical practice under Colorado law, it needs to be consistent with what is lawful under Colorado law. I think that's just a matter of statutory interpretation as opposed to a particular equitable type of defense. That would be the way I would view it, Your Honor.
Don't you face the same problem having raised the affirmative defense of, to borrow the phrase, unclean hands? To sort of pick up on where my colleague went, since that was your affirmative defense in this case?
Well, the affirmative defense was actually under the Colorado Medical Practices Act, Your Honor. We argued from the very outset, we asserted it as a separate defense that under the Medical Practices Act, she could not remain, the plaintiff could not remain a shareholder. So our defense throughout has been under the Medical Practices Act, basically saying that as a matter of interpretation under Colorado law, that she could not remain a shareholder of this medical practice consistent with Colorado law.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, but if the corporation were violating the Colorado Medical Practices Act during that time period, isn't that
an unclean hands situation?
If it were violating it, I mean, I suppose if somebody knowingly did that, I suppose one could say that, yes.
My my question was going to be, is there any evidence in the record, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the name, but the Dr. Escajeda tried to conform the practices of the corporation to the Medical Malpractices Act, or that he objected that Dr. Corey was doing something contrary to the Medical Practices Act, or isn't he equally culpable? I mean, poor choice of words, Brett, but isn't he equally responsible for, put it in your terminology, practicing medicine through a corporation without complying with the act?
Well, I would say, Your Honor, is there's substantial evidence that the medical practice during the time it was operating was taking steps to comply with the Medical Practices Act, including by having its own medical malpractice insurance. That's in the record, by having a contract with the hospital, and by acting in sort of forward capacity or an outward capacity as a legitimate medical practice. To answer your question, I don't think there's anything in the record during the time that Dr. Escajeda raised this issue, because I don't believe, candidly, neither he nor Dr. Corey were necessarily aware of the issue during the time that this was operating.
Or if they were aware, at least they weren't, neither of them was concerned.
I think there's nothing in the record, I believe, which would show that either doctor intended for this medical practice to be in violation of the Medical Practices Act, that they thought they were running legitimate medical practice, and that I think, as Your Honor indicated, you know, when it was first formed as an Inc., it was understandable why it wouldn't have been a PC at that point. It should have been converted into a PC in 1993 and going forward, and they were acting in accordance with that. It was an oversight, and the question, I suppose, is that does that oversight essentially mean no other provisions of the Medical Practice Act apply, and that the only ramification here is that if the Board of Medical Examiners is interested, they can look at it. We would argue again, Your Honor, that if somebody is coming to a court to have its rights declared under a medical practice in Colorado, its rights have to be consistent with what the medical corporation can do in Colorado.
Pardon me, Mr. Boone.
Yes.
You just said that there's nothing in the record to indicate that the parties did not want to comply with the Medical Practices Act. Is there any direct evidence in the record indicating that the parties wished to comply with the Medical Practices Act?
I would say, Your Honor, other than simply, I mean, to answer that question, no. I suppose the answer to that is no. Your Honor, I would like to reserve a few minutes, my few remaining minutes, for rebuttal if you have no further questions.
Certainly.
Thanks.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. I am James Rudaboris. I am here representing the appellee, Dr. Judy Corey, who is present in the courtroom. Also present is my associate, Mr. Colin Moriarty. Your Honor, the appellant's arguments, albeit creative, unfortunately, the majority of them were not raised at the trial court below. As a matter of fact, the specific arguments that the appellant made, they specifically, expressly consented to the jury deciding that particular issue at the trial court below. In the record, there is a response.
When you say that issue, you mean her shareholder status?
Yes, Your Honor. There is a response to our motion to bifurcate the verdict, which was filed by the appellant on August 7, 2008. Page 3 says, the plaintiff asked the court to decide, number one, the issue of whether plaintiff remains a shareholder, officer, and director of Northwest. Number two, it goes on to talk about financial records, a claim that was eventually dismissed from the case. The page goes on to say, in fact, that paragraph, those disputed facts are to be resolved by the jury along with the related issues raised by the defendant's amended counterclaim for breach of contract. And that's an interesting point to make here, because the appellants sought a claim for breach of contract. They claimed that Dr. Corey breached the contract to sell her shares of Northwest in 2004. Presupposes the notion that she had to be a shareholder in order to breach the contract to sell her shares. The appellants have ignored that argument since the very beginning, claiming that that was irrelevant. The other parts of this go on to say, to the contrary, defendants believe these disputed issues could be appropriately tried to a jury. And in fact, the most poignant point of their response is the last paragraph, which says, at a minimum, then, this court on its own initiative may order the jury to render an advisory opinion on these issues. And if it concludes the issues are for it to ultimately decide. Alternatively, if the parties consent, the jury may decide the issue itself, even if, as the plaintiff argues, the claims are for the court. Defendants are willing to give such consent should the court determine such consent is necessary. With such consent by the parties, there would be no doubt the jury could decide these claims, and there would be no need to argue about bifurcation of the testimony, verdicts, or anything else. The appellants themselves asked for these particular issues to be decided by the jury.
Was the jury instructed on this affirmative defense dealing with the Colorado Medical Practice Act?
There was a specific jury interrogatory related to whether or not the jury found that Dr. Corey remained a shareholder today.
Now, my question was a little more narrow.
I'm sorry.
The defendants raised an affirmative defense by pleading concerning noncompliance with the Colorado Medical Practice Act, correct?
That is...
What was the jury instructed on that affirmative defense?
I don't believe that the jury was instructed on the particular affirmative defense of whether or not the Northwest complied with the Medical Practices Act. I don't believe that they were instructed on that because the appellant didn't raise the issue below. He had the opportunity to put any jury instruction into the record that he wished. He did not, in fact, stipulated to the jury interrogatories in which the jury found specifically that Dr. Judy Corey was a shareholder today.
If as you describe it, the jury wholly resolved that issue, then what was the purpose of the declaratory judgment claim?
The declaratory judgment that was raised, I'm sorry, the declaratory judgment declared whether or not Dr. Judy Corey remained a shareholder and was entitled to the benefits of the shareholder, benefits of a shareholder status. And that's what the judgment.
How is that different from what you're saying the jury decided?
Well, the jury decided the ultimate question of fact of whether or not Dr. Judy Corey was a shareholder in Northwest. And the deck judgment determined whether, as a matter of law, whether or not she remained a shareholder in Northwest during the time period in which she had this cancer and could not necessarily work as an anesthesiologist for Northwest, which presupposes the notion is also raised in the appellant's brief, whether or not Dr. Judy Corey actually practiced medicine. And they claim that because she retired from the practice of anesthesiology, that prevented her or divested her shares under the Colorado Medical Corporations Act, which it does not. The Colorado Medical Corporations Act does not require, Practices Act does not require a doctor to practice in this specialty. Requires the doctor to practice medicine. And there is a big distinction in that right. The other point that I'd like to discuss is the standard of review. The appellant argues that the court may review the trial court's findings on the question of law de novo. This is the only argument that the appellant brings on appeal is whether Dr. Judy Corey remained a shareholder in Northwest, and they now say that that was a question of law for the court to decide. But no part of this appeal is subject to de novo review. The jury's findings of facts are not reviewed de novo, but will only be set aside by this court where not sustained by competent and adequate evidence, and that's Anderson case, Your Honor.
Okay, but isn't there a legal issue here as to whether the Colorado Medical Practices Act dictates, and I'll say terms and conditions of employment for lack of a better term, of Dr. Corey's relationship with Northwest?
No, it does not.
That's not a legal issue?
It is not, Your Honor. The reason is because doctors, like any other individuals, are free to enter into organizations. Northwest was not a medical practice. It was not formed as a medical practice.
Do you agree or disagree that it began providing medical services as of the date of the new contract, which I think was 1993?
I completely disagree, and in fact there is substantial evidence in the record that the minute that Northwest undertook that contract to perform services for the hospital, not the public at large, the hospital, it immediately delegated all of its duties to Western Anesthesia Consultants, PC, a medical practice that was organized under the Colorado Medical Practices Act. It delegated all of its medical practice duties to WAC PC at that time. Northwest Anesthesia Incorporated only retained the right to collect for the services that the CNRAs, the hospital CNRAs, who were employed by the hospital, were performing in the obstetric ward. The right to collect for those services. It was a billing corporation.
Is there a factual finding by the trial court, or is there a factual finding necessarily implied from the jury's verdict as to whether or not Northwest performed medical services after 1993?
No, but there is no factual finding by the trial court and or the jury. However, there is substantial evidence in the record. Dr. Corey herself testified to the distinction between the two entities. Understand that when WAC PC, Western Anesthesia, not Northwest, performed these services, they billed for them and the doctors got paid for them. So Northwest didn't provide any medical services in order to bill for and get paid. They were only the assignee or the delegee, I'm sorry, the assignee of the right to collect for the services.
So when I read the trial court's order, it appears that it decided it didn't need to reach that factual determination and therefore did not, correct?
That was my understanding too when I read the order as well, Your Honor.
But I take it that you would agree that the articles of incorporation do not comply with the Colorado Medical Practices Act.
They do not comply. As a matter of fact, the reason that they do not comply is because there was substantial evidence in the record that Dr. Corey testified when they set up that corporation, they had that in mind. That's why they delegated the duties to WAC PC.
So, counsel, why don't the ramifications of failing to comply with the act include the divestment of Dr. Corey's shares? Is it because of what you just said a moment ago?
Yes, Your Honor, because it's not a medical, it's not a PMC, it's not a professional medical corporation. And even if it was a professional medical corporation, does the act then, there is no specific language or statutory interpretation that says if you have a corporation that does practice medicine that's not set up under the Medical Practices Act, that the shareholders, all their shares are divested. There is criminal and possibly civil liability in the effect that one of the patients of the hospital brought suit against one of Northwest for whatever reason. At that point, because the corporation not set up as a professional medical corporation, the doctors have their individual liability, and that is the consequences of not complying with the statute. Doesn't require divestment of shares in a corporation not set up as a professional medical corporation. If that answers your question, Your Honor.
Who would have the legal power? Let's assume that the Dr. Corey had not become ill and the entity just continued to do its business. Who would have the power to require her or the other gentleman to divest their shares because they're not in compliance with the Medical Practices Act?
Well, they would, of course. They could have taken account for that when they wrote the Articles of Incorporation.
No, my question was, we've got a corporation that by its articles doesn't comply.
Right.
We've at least got a factual dispute as to whether the corporation's providing medical services. You say it doesn't, he says it does. I mean, let's assume that the corporation was in fact providing medical services but was not in compliance with the Medical Practices Act. Is there any body that would have the authority to tell it to stop doing so?
I don't believe there would be. I believe that if it was practicing medicine and it didn't comply with the act, then there is no limit of liability. The corporation and its shareholders are personally liable.
And that's the only consequence?
I believe so, under the act. Well, let me just stop. Okay, say for example that a patient brought a suit for unauthorized practice of medicine. The prosecutor and the state attorney general, then I believe, once an investigation is taken, could then impose regulatory compliance over that corporation and say you got to comply with the act if you're going to continue to practice medicine. So there are civil and criminal sanctions associated with that. In the event that there was an issue related to that, there are regulatory bodies, but in this circumstance, you know, there is no regulatory body that would say because you didn't set up your medical corporation under the Medical Corporations Act and because you practice medicine, your shares are divested because you got cancer.
So your argument is that there are consequences for not doing that. Those consequences could be, you said district attorney, that implies criminal prosecution.
According, yes.
And then there's also the prospect of, is there the prospect that a doctor could lose his or her license?
Yeah, I believe so, Your Honor. I don't know exactly what the consequences are for the unauthorized practice of medicine in Colorado, but whatever the consequences thereby, I believe the doctor could, in that circumstance, suffer those consequences. So there are consequences to not complying with the act. However, divestment of shares in a corporation that doesn't practice medicine, first of all, the act has to apply, and it doesn't apply to this case. The last point that I will make is that because the appellants have agreed that these issues were going to be decided by the jury, and the jury did decide these issues, we would ask that the court grant us our attorney's fees and costs under 39.5 for this appeal as well, Your Honors. Thank you.
Was there an attorney fee award below?
No, there was not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Just a few points in rebuttal, Your Honors. First of all, with respect to the way the jury and the judge interacted on this claim, and we've briefed this extensively in our reply brief and in our opening brief, the court reserved ruling on our motion for directed verdict until it ruled on the first claim for relief, which both parties submitted to it as a legal determination regarding her shareholder status. What counsel is referring to is a special verdict interrogatory form that the judge wanted the jury to provide and advisory opinions regarding certain factual findings that the court would incorporate into its rulings.
Did the court specifically enter an order saying that the jury's determination on shareholder status would only be advisory?
Did it enter a particular order to that effect? I don't believe so, no, Your Honor.
Did it so state in colloquy with counsel?
It should be on the record, yes, Your Honor. And the reason why that was in there was this counterclaim that, in fact, her shares had been purchased. So one of the issues was, did the jury think she remained a shareholder? And if so, did she remain a shareholder throughout the time? The reason why this was important as well, Your Honor, is since the jury did determine that she had retired, and this was one of the possible places under the Medical Practices Act where, and again, divestiture of shares, my client had tried to buy her shares, thought he had reached an agreement on it, but whatever, you know, that had not worked under the Medical Practices Act. This period in early 2004 would be relevant to when she had retired. We had argued, again, that the illness exemption would only last a year. So there were different points in time, you'll see, as we just argued in our briefs, where if the court were to determine that her shareholder status ended earlier than the present day, in lieu of a remand, it could have an amended judgment based upon what the jury had awarded up to that date. Finally, the court asked, was there evidence that the doctors here intended to comply with the Medical Practices Act? Counsel raises a very good point, which is the sister corporation, Western Anesthesia Consultants, was in compliance with the Medical Practices Act. Northwest, when it's formed, was not, because it was not a medical practice. What should have happened is when it did start performing services, and Your Honor, I'm out of time, I'll refer to the briefs, extensive evidence that it was performing medical services, it should have simply made, as with Western Anesthesia, it should have been the same thing. And I think both doctors intended to do right, and it was an oversight. Thank you, Your Honor.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course. This exhausts our afternoon docket, and the bailiff may announce a recess.
All rise. The court will be in recess subject to call.